Hangi Anderman?
Everybody, it's episode 69.
Yeah, 69, dude.
Beavis and Butthead laugh.
That's pretty bad.
I'm just kidding. I have to say it. Now, this topic today, I've been wanting to do this one for a long time, but for some reason it kept getting pushed back. I think John R. requested this.
Okay.
Like a while back on one of our other YouTube shows. I don't remember which one it was. And if it wasn't John R., I apologize, but I'm pretty sure it was. He's like, you should do Mysteries of Rock and Roll.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is a cool ass idea. So I wrote it on the list, but then it kept getting rearranged like when we were adding other stuff and everything. But this week we didn't really know what we wanted to do. So then we were just going through the list and said, yeah, let's do that one because that sounds super fun.
Yeah, it'd be a fun one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know,
there was some weird stuff that happened in the rock industry. You know, I wouldn't necessarily call it. It was not really paranormal, but.
No.
Yeah. But weird. Unsolved mysteries, that type of stuff.
Yeah. I like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the topic of the show today. And before we do that, we'll just do a couple shout outs. My book, The Faceless Villain, is out. I don't think the audiobook is up, so, but it should be very soon. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it takes a while to go through quality control. And, you know, you'll be getting your codes sometime before Christmas, I would think, if you requested one. Also, be sure to check out our newest movie review, which was Dune, the very famously not good.
we had fun making that one.
We did, yeah.
We had fun making that one.
But yeah, so that just went up a little bit late.
Yeah.
But it's it should be up there.
Also, Patreon. Patreon went through some changes. Some creators lost a whole bunch of subs.
Yeah, we have lost two.
Yeah, we lost two.
Patrons.
Know, just be patient. Hopefully, you know, some people are saying that this probably won't last with Patreon and they'll probably go back to the way it was. What they were doing is they were charging people some kind of weird processing fee, which, you know, kind of sucks, you know.
I got a thing about it and they were like, well, the creators are now being given 95%.
Yeah, we're getting more out of it, but they're getting the piece too.
But they're, yeah. So it's like they did some kind of flat fee. So I don't know exactly what they're doing, you know, hiking up people, like people's contributions or charging them an extra fee or something like that. So I don't know how that's all going to play out. But yeah, we have actually lost a couple of patrons over it, which sucks. But
if you guys don't like Patreon, of course, you can always just do one-time payments through PayPal.
Yeah, take those two. Like I said, you can go to our blog and 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com and there's like a little link in the sidebar.
Yeah,
goes to my PayPal account.
And if you guys know any PayPal alternatives, just drop a comment in the comment section and maybe we'll open it up an account there too, because it's probably good to diversify.
Yeah,
that way if something goes wrong with Patreon, there's backups.
Yeah, we can do that too.
Okay.
And other than that, I think that's about it, right? Yeah, you know, other than just our regular stuff, shirts, right. Facebook, all that other kind of stuff.
Blah, blah, blah.
You guys know how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So what I wanted to do with it, like I wrote down a whole bunch of stuff for this Mysteries of Rock and Roll one. I don't know if I'm going to get to everything.
Okay.
You know, we can cover some of the ones, like I wrote down kind of the really obvious ones, like people that think Elvis is still alive or, you know, like Elvis sightings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the whole Paul McCartney death hoax, which I always thought was kind of fascinating. But, you know, there's a couple that I wanted to go more a little bit in depth about, like, you know, that are a little less common.
Mm-hmm.
Although one thing I do have to say about that Paul McCartney one, this really demonstrates to me how when someone gets an idea in their head, like about some kind of conspiracy theory or something like that, they will really contort themselves into unbelievable knots to, you know, find confirmation of that theory. I mean, you know, the whole, like the clues, I'm sitting there going, okay, like, why is this compelling?
Yeah, it was on the Abbey Road album.
Well, there were other clues too, but it's like they were so lame.
Yeah.
And it's like really the whole, the main one is like Abbey Road and it's supposed to be, it's supposed to symbolize like a funeral procession, right? It's like John Lennon is in the front and he's the preacher because he has all white on.
And somehow this is tied in with like the song Revolution Number 9. You play it backwards. It had a backwards recording of
that said it supposedly says turn me on, dead man.
And then you hear a guy go, let me out. Boom, yeah. Boom, 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 boom.
Like, and also, you know, there's like, you know? Yeah, all these like clues in the songs and everything like that. There was something at the end of Strawberry Fields Forever, too, where he supposedly said, I buried Paul, even though John Lennon later came out and said, no, I actually said cranberry sauce. But, okay. You know, nice try. But yeah, so obviously, and then the whole, and I actually had forgotten about this one, but also on the cover of Abbey Road, you know, because Paul McCartney's barefoot and he's like out of step with the other ones and stuff. And that's supposed to symbolize he's dead somehow. But also the car in the background behind them on the Abbey Road cover, the license plate of the car is 28 if, which they said that, oh, that means that Paul McCartney would be 28 if he was still alive. Yeah, which I'm like, really, you guys? That's all you got? Come on. But yeah, so that's kind of like the granddaddy of all these like rock and roll conspiracy theories.
For you youngsters, that was like one from our parents' generation almost.
Yeah, I'm a big Beatles fan. My dad was Beatles a huge Beatles fan, and I grew up on them too. So
the Abbey Road album came out, and the fans started to get in their mind that Paul McCartney was dead.
And that he'd been replaced with a lookalike. That's and that they were giving all these coded messages to try to... that's something that happens in a lot of conspiracy theories. It's always kind of like these people... You know, that was the whole thing about like the Da Vinci Code and all that kind of stuff. Where it's like, you know, why would you put all these clues there?
Yeah.
Like if you wanted to keep it a secret, you would just keep your mouth shut about it. You wouldn't like put secret clues in for other people to figure out.
Acid's a hell of a drug.
I guess it is. I don't know what that is.
Okay,
I wouldn't know anything about that.
No, you wouldn't know about
but,
that.
But yeah, speaking of acid, another one I wanted to briefly mention too was the theory that's called, well, it has many names. It's usually called the dark side of the rainbow, the dark side of Oz, or the Wizard of Floyd.
Yeah, this is a good one. I know about this.
Which is to say that the Pink Floyd album, Dark Side of the Moon, lines up with the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, you can if you start at the same time. The album kind of goes along with the scenes that you're seeing in The Wizard of Oz. I've seen examples of it. I've never really done it myself, but I've seen examples.
Well, yeah.
And it does look like they were kind of made to be played at the same time.
Well, sort of.
Yeah.
I kind of think, well, okay, one, there's controversy about when... The first thing that should be said is the album is not nearly as long as the movie.
So you have to know when to start it, right?
Yeah, but I mean... And there's controversy about that. Most people have something to do. It's either to do like with the MGM lion at the beginning. Like most people say the third roar.
Okay.
Some people say, when the screen goes black after the lion fades and stuff like that. Yeah. Now, I saw a YouTube video where someone had it like edited together all the places that it matched.
Right.
And to me, it didn't seem all that compelling.
Okay, so... So this is just a legend. It doesn't actually work.
Not really. And and obviously they didn't do it on purpose. I mean, they've been asked about it. It really didn't gain a lot of steam, this theory, until the 90s, really.
Okay.
You know, it started out like on some internet use groups and stuff like that where people were like, hey, you guys, this fucking matches up. You know, someone was like hitting the bomb kind of
hard. I think that's when it probably hit the mainstream. But I remember I remember in the late 80s that we were talking
about
this.
Yeah, it went mainstream in
like
the
90s. Like 87 or so, 86, people were noticing that they kind of lined up in a way. But I just heard this from high school friends.
Yeah.
I didn't try it.
There's really only a couple of places.
And you know what? LSD is a hell of a drug.
That's again, because everybody that talked about it was
somebody who was tripping. Right. You know, who fucking tripping.
I mean, like I said, there's kind of a couple cool things. Like most of it seems like just musical stings. Like you know, like this, like a swell of music will happen when something is happening, like important in the movie. There's a lot. There's the line about balance when Dorothy is walking on the fence of the pig pen. You know, I think that screaming part in Great Gig in the Sky happens like when the tornado comes.
Yeah, on a side note, if you guys have never heard the Dark Side of the Moon album by Pink Floyd, you're fucking wrong. I mean, I like Pink Floyd. I appreciate it, but I'm not really a huge prog rock type, you know, guy.
Yeah.
You know? But that is a really good band.
Yeah,
it's a really good band.
Yeah.
I mean, especially, you know, you know what I'm saying. You're high.
But they can they can be enjoyed without substances.
Yeah. The music's excellent quality.
Yeah. And I'm into that too. And like, you know, I'm kind of a punk and post-punk goth chick, but you know, I like a lot of, like I said, I grew up on the Beatles and the Doors and stuff like that. Cause my dad was,
it's along the same lines as like a Beatles album. If you've never heard it.
Yeah.
Like a really, really good Beatles album. Yeah. And, well, kind of.
All right. So I also wanted to get like more in depth about some that are maybe less well known. So I also, and before we do that, I kind of wanted to mention too, the infamous 27 Club.
What?
Which is all these rock stars that died at the age of 27.
Yeah, we were talking about this even way back in the 80s.
Yeah. And there's like, if you go to the Wikipedia page, because there is a Wikipedia page for the 27 Club, there's a huge list. It was like way more than I thought. However, there has been like a statistical study done of this. And they're like, well, rock stars and musicians, artists, stuff like that.
That's their life expectancy.
do tend to die younger.
Yeah.
But not at that specific age. Like, there's it's a myth that there's like a spike at 27.
Yeah, okay.
It's just, people noticed it just because there were so many high profile famous ones that died at that age. You know, Jim Morrison, Janis Joplin.
It's a coincidence.
Jimi Hendrix, Kurt Cobain, Amy Winehouse. Even, and actually I had forgotten about this, but when I was looking at the Wikipedia page, because the Wikipedia page goes way back to like the early days, like some old blues musicians and stuff like that. And a lot of them did die. And actually some of the ones I'm going to talk about too were on this list also, like Robert Johnson and stuff like that. But I had forgotten all about this. Pete DeFreitas, who was used to be the drummer for Echo and the Bunnymen, who's one of my favorite bands. He died at 27, too. I remember him dying. Okay. He died in a motorcycle accident.
Okay.
So, but I didn't realize he was 27 years old when he died. I do remember him dying, however. And I was like, oh, shit, I didn't even realize that he was on there. Yeah, there was a fuck ton.
My explanation for this, though, is if you just start messing with drugs and alcohol at an early age like those people did, and you run it hard, chances are you're going to die early.
Yeah.
And it's just statistically, I think it's going to, 27
because
is about,
honestly, most of it was drugs. Most of it was drinking.
Sure.
A couple of them were accidents, car accidents, motorcycle accidents. Yeah.
They're pushing their luck. They're getting to their 30s and, they're approaching their 30s.
There were only a couple that were like, I think one or two were maybe cancer or, something weird like that for someone that young. But most of them,
their nine lives ran out.
Yeah, rock and roll lifestyle kind of
thing. As the 20s were ebbing away, they ran out of fucking the lives, like a cat with nine lives. That's the way they are.
Yeah.
I looked at poor Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
It was alcohol. It seems to be unclear.
He actually died. The official cause of death, I believe, was asphyxiation.
He
choked on his own
on his
vomit.
Own vomit, sitting up in a car, in the backseat of a car.
Yeah.
But was it alcohol? I mean, I from what I remember, I think it was just a mixture of a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I think it was actually.
I think it was mainly alcohol.
Yeah.
Because I've heard a lot of different stories that he really wasn't into drugs that much. I mean, he did it, but it wasn't it wasn't an unusual amount.
Yeah.
For a guy his age in that place
in
and
that
time. You know what I mean? But
that's what's kind of odd to me.
It's
just like,
kind of bad luck.
It's like, some of the people on the list were hitting it hard and shit like that. But then there were people like, Iggy Pop or people like Lemmy or something like that who lived until, Iggy Pop's still alive. I mean, Lemmy died, but he lived to a pretty ripe old age.
Iggy Pop was mummified. By whatever it was
probably.
He was doing. Yeah.
I kind of feel
he's like no body fat on him.
Yeah, he's just like all wiry and he's like a cool old dude. I mean, I don't think he does it anymore.
Right.
But I mean, his entire fucking shit, man. His entire youth, he probably doesn't even remember.
Evidently, Jimi Hendrix, he was legendary, for the amount of LSD he would take.
Yeah.
But people who knew him said he really didn't take anywhere near as much as people thought he was taking.
And honestly, I never really thought of LSD
is not deadly per se.
Yeah, not like, not like heroin or even not like alcohol.
Right,
because look at fucking poor Amy Winehouse. Yeah. She just like fucking drank herself to death pretty much.
Bon Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah, from AC/DC. Yeah.
Right, all that kind of shit. But yeah, so like I said, one of the stories I wanted to go into, because I've always loved this story, and this guy was also a member of the 27 Club, and it's Robert Johnson. Now, he was an old blues guy.
Mm-hmm.
Legendary. He's only made, there are only 29 surviving recordings of his music. Now, the story about Robert Johnson is that he sold his soul to the devil for his musical ability. And the reason that this legend comes along is because evidently when he was young, like not a lot is known about him because, you know, it was the 30s and, you know, he was a rambling blues man. He just went from town to town and played and stayed with various women. And so he wanted to be a musician. He admired other blues men like Son House and stuff like that. Now, it is said that he could play like the harmonica, he could play the jaw harp and stuff like that. But evidently, when he first started out, his guitar playing was so bad that, you know, people would be like, go in there, take that guitar away from that boy. Right, it's like, you know, that racket he's making and stuff like that. But then it seems like he kind of went to another town for a little while. And when he came back, he was like a virtuoso, right?
That's how he sold his soul.
Yeah, that's how the story goes. So the story arose that he had gone to the crossroads, like you do, and had sold his soul to the devil to learn to play like that. Because even now, and shit, man, like even all the guys that were influenced by him, like Keith Richards and Eric Clapton, have said that he's actually one of the most important guitarists ever. Because if you listen to all of these old recordings, it sounds as though, and Keith Richards has said this also, it sounds as though two people are playing, but it's not. It's just him. So he's kind of acknowledged as one of the guitar gods. You know what I mean? I think when like Rolling Stone did their like top 100 guitars, he was like number 5 or something like that. So really like one of the most important, definitely one of the most important, you know, Delta blues.
Do they know what he's people. Doing? Do they know what style he's
doing? Yeah. But it's just strange because
it came out of nowhere.
Because it seemed like it came out of nowhere.
Right.
So I think like the legend kind of, and the thing that's weird about it is that there was another guy who was actually a bit earlier than Robert Johnson. I can't remember what his name is right now, but I was looking it up earlier, who had also, there was a similar kind of thing that he had sold his soul to. Apparently that was kind of a big blues thing. But Robert Johnson, there's also a legend too that, I mean, he also died at 27 and no one's quite sure what killed him. But the most persistent myth is that because, you know, he got around, Robert Johnson. He, like I said, he would go from town to town and play at juke joints and stuff like that. He wasn't like super famous in his lifetime. He was just kind of wandered around Mississippi and stuff like that. But he would, every town he went to, he would, what they called it was that he cultivated like women to stay with.
Right.
So he would have a place to stay. Yeah, every time he went to a town.
Yeah.
So I guess this did not really endear him to the local menfolk.
Right.
So the story goes that one night he was at a dance, you know, and he'd been playing there and he was kind of flirting with this woman who was married.
Yeah.
And evidently,
you don't do that in Mississippi.
The guy poisoned a bottle of whiskey.
Damn.
And gave it to him and he drank it.
Oh, come on. You couldn't beat up a guitar player?
I don't know. I guess poisoning was like just easier. He didn't want to get in trouble.
Yeah, okay.
But apparently he got sick that night of the day and he died like 3 days later. Most people say it's strychnine, but strychnine is not, I mean, you would be able to tell if it was strychnine because it has a very distinctive
Sounds like
odor.
A legend.
So, yes, but they're not sure how he died at any rate. But he also died at 27.
Probably syphilis.
Well, no. We'll see. Now, some people have said syphilis, but I think that's
because there was no deterioration, though. It makes you crazy.
Some people have said syphilis, but I think they're confusing him with another blues guy that had a similar name that did die of syphilis that they know of. But this guy, they don't really know how he died. And also, they're not real sure where he's buried. He has like three different grave markers.
Well, he probably died a pauper, so they just put him in a hole.
Well, they did. They think, he was like in a pauper's grave, like in a potter's field.
Right.
So they don't know exactly where he is, but there are three markers in different places that are like, he's totally buried here.
Yeah.
We think. And also, no one knows exactly where the crossroads are, even though I think in Mississippi, I can't remember what town it was, but there's like a little, there's a little sign there saying this is where Robert Johnson sold his soul to the devil. Now, some people have said too that I read somewhere that they said, well, maybe it wasn't the devil in the Christian sense, but it was Legba. You know what I mean? Like the African folk deity who was supposed to, you know, but, you know, since he died so young and no one's really sure how he died, I think that myth became so persistent because it's almost like the devil gave him this this musical ability and then came and took him.
I saw this movie called Brother,
Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, yeah, that one. Yeah. And there was a guy in there, blues player, who sold his soul to the devil.
That's probably who he was based on.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't know maybe if you knew if that was who they're talking about.
He was the most famous one. He's actually, like I said, he's quite famous. But he also sang about the devil. He had one called Hellhound on My Trail.
Yeah.
You know, some of his songs where he says, you know, Satan came to the door and is going to take him away and stuff like that. So, you know, this whole kind of myth built around him. And like I said, since there's only, they know hardly anything about his early life. There are only two photographs of him that they know are him that still exist. So he's just almost kind of like this mythical figure you went to this place and like the devil made him play. And like I said, selling your soul to the devil musicians, that actually goes back to fucking I think on the 17th century. I want to say Niccolo Paganini was like the virtuoso fiddle player, and supposedly he sold his soul to the devil also. So that's kind of a,
to where it comes from,
a Faustian well, it comes from Faust obviously, but kind of a Faustian myth. So so there was that. Now I also wanted to get a little bit into Bobby Fuller.
Never heard of this guy.
Now, Bobby Fuller, he was actually, now this was in the early 60s.
Okay.
Now, if you'll remember, like, you know, in the early 60s, you're kind of the Beatles, you know, British Invasion type of stuff. Bobby Fuller was a little bit of a throwback. He kind of liked more 50s rock and roll, Eddie Cochran type of thing, Buddy Holly. And he had a band called the Bobby Fuller Four. Mm-hmm. And they actually were starting to get well-known by doing a version of I Fought the Law, which wasn't written by him. It was written by the guy who was in the Crickets, Buddy Holly's band. But a lot of people have covered it, obviously. And so they did probably one of the most famous versions of I Fought the Law. And it came out and he was getting super famous and everything like that. And then about a month after after the record came out and after he started getting famous and everything like that, he was found dead in a car in front of his house.
Weird.
Yeah. So this happened in 1966 in July. He was 23 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Found dead inside a car. The coroner's report says, deceased was found lying face down in front seat of car. There was a gas can there that was one third full. Windows were all rolled up, doors shut. Not locked, keys not in ignition. He had multiple bruises on his arms and shoulders, and his body was soaked with gasoline. Other witnesses report that one of his fingers was broken.
Huh.
Now, the weird thing is that initially, they were like, oh, suicide.
Which,
what? Okay. Yeah, I don't see how that could have happened. First rule to suicide. 3 months later, the medical examiner changed the cause of death to accidental asphyxiation. Saying, oh, somehow he brought a gas can into the car and died of the fumes.
Maybe they thought he was huffing.
Maybe. I don't really know. It's strange because the whole thing. So, okay, obviously it has arisen over the years that a lot of people do not think that he committed suicide or that it was an accident, but that he was, in fact, murdered.
Yeah, it sounds like somebody tried to set him on fire.
That's what people are saying. So, because not only was there gasoline can in the car, but his body was like soaked with gasoline. And like I said, I'm not sure, because I don't know if the coroner's report said his fingers were broken, but some witnesses who had found the body said his fingers were broken and he had like bruises and shit. So it does seem like he maybe got roughed up and someone was trying to set him on fire and then they took off. It's weird because the car, like I think his mom, did he live with his mom or it was his mom's house or something like that? But his mom, I think, was the one that found him. And she said, so the car wasn't there, and then all of a sudden the car turns up one morning, and he's fucking laying dead in there.
Yeah.
So, you know, that seems a little weird. Now, people who are leaning toward the murder theory, they usually point to a mob hit.
Right.
Because they think that he was getting friendly with a woman that was kind of a girlfriend of a mob boss or something like that. Or that the mafia was involved in some way with the record company and, you know, he was had pissed someone off or something like that. Evidently, some people have said that Bobby Fuller had a large life insurance policy taken out on him by one of the people at the record company. I don't know if that's true.
It sounds like a fight over a girl.
It might be. Also, some people have said that Bobby Fuller was at a party and had done a bunch of LSD and had somehow died in an accident. And so they didn't, you know, people from the party just like stuck him in the car and put him somewhere else. So they didn't want to like deal with it or get in trouble or anything like that. And there's also a little more far-fetched theory that maybe Charles Manson or the Manson family had something to do with it, even though it doesn't really seem like their MO. No. And I don't know why anyone would think that. But so it's kind of a weird case. It's funny because I was looking around on YouTube and I was watching some stuff about it. And I had totally forgotten about, do you guys remember the show Mysteries and Scandals? I think it used to be on MTV or VH1 or something like that. And the host was like AJ Benza. I was like, oh my God, I'd forgotten all about that guy. He was like kind of a tough guy type of thing. And they all did, it was like a half hour show and they did all stuff about, you know, actors and musicians and stuff, like weird unsolved mystery stories about it. And actually, I think this story was on Unsolved Mysteries, the Bobby Fuller murder.
That was a good series.
Yeah, I did too. But yeah, so to this day, I think they're not really sure what exactly happened to him. The investigation into his death wasn't terribly well done, it should be said. So I don't know if there was some kind of cover-up or if they just didn't care or anything like that. I suppose it could have been an accident, but it doesn't really sound like it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It kind of sounds like a murder. All right. So we're going to take a break right now. And when I come back, I'm going to talk about another accidental death that some people think was a murder. And also a very strange disappearance.
You got anything about Elvis?
A little bit. But like I said, the Elvis one seems very...
I got some shit about Elvis.
Oh, you do? Okay, yeah. Well, you can...
We'll talk about it.
You can talk about that at the end. Okay. All right, so we're going to take a break and we'll be back in just a minute.
There are terrors, real and imaginary, and I write about them all. Paranormal nonfiction. Horror fiction. The Rochdale Poltergeist. The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Associated Monsters. Red Menace. The Five Poisons. Bellwether. Go to www.jennyashford.com. Or search Amazon for the Jenny Ashford author page.
The Unseen Hand, a new exploration of poltergeist phenomena by Jenny Ashford, author of The Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, and The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Unseen Hand is a comprehensive collection of over 100 reported poltergeist cases from the first century to the present day. All the best-known cases are presented, from the Bell Witch to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, from Rosenheim to Tina Resch, from Enfield to The Entity. A large selection of fascinating and lesser-known accounts from all over the world are also included, and all contain testimony from the most eerie and extraordinary events. The Unseen Hand is the ultimate compendium for readers interested in poltergeist disturbances throughout history and the theories behind what causes them. On sale now from Amazon in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. Go to Unseen Handbook on Facebook and visit www.jennyashford.com for more information.
The Villisca Axe Murders, Hinter Kaifeck Farm, the Axeman of New Orleans, the Cleveland Torso, who put Bella in the witch hour, the Solder Chickens, the Phantom Killer, the Black Dahlia, Somerton. What is it about these unsolved murders that still fascinates us long after the cases have gone cold? Is it simply that we enjoy being able to come up with our own theories about what happened to the unfortunate victims? Or are we intrigued by the terrifying possibility that the killers are still out there somewhere? Take a grisly journey through the blood-soaked avenues of early 20th century crime in the new book, The Faceless Villain, Volume 1, by Jenny Ashford. Now available on Amazon.
All right, so speaking of quote-unquote accidental deaths that some people think is murder, and this is actually quite a very famous one, Brian Jones.
Yeah, okay.
Originally of the Rolling Stones. Also a member of the 27 Club. He was also 27 when died, weirdly enough. Now, this one is pretty weird, okay? Brian Jones was actually one of the founding members of the Rolling Stones, worked on a lot of their early albums and stuff like that. A multi-instrumentalist, not a songwriter. So, you know, when Mick Jagger and Keith Richards you know, came in the band, and they started taking on a more significant role in writing songs and stuff like that. So he started to get pushed out a little bit.
Yeah.
He also did a lot of managerial duties for them. And then later when they hired a manager, he got pushed out a little bit more. And evidently because of his personality type, this kind of made him resentful. And he, you know, took to drinking a lot and doing a lot of drugs and stuff like that. And he was starting to gain a lot of weight.
Psychic TV did a song about him called Dog Star.
That's what, that's right.
It's really cool. That's a good song, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was called Godstar.
Godstar? Yeah, Godstar.
Yeah.
Is it a Godstar or Dogstar?
I'm pretty sure it's Godstar.
Godstar.
Because I have that. I have that on my CD collection somewhere. Well, no, I could actually. But yeah, so like I said, it's kind of a very famous story. So he kind of gets pushed out of the band. They're going to go on tour, and they don't think that he's going to be able to do it because he's kind of fallen apart. So they kind of kick him out of the band that he formed.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes and retires to, he had this really nice, like 16th century big farmhouse out in Sussex called Cotchford Farm.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of retires out there and he's hanging out with his girlfriend and all this other kind of stuff. Now, evidently, it's 1969, July 2nd. Him and his girlfriend at the time, who was named Anna Wolin. They evidently, now I don't know how many people were actually present. Some people said it was a party. Some people said it was just a get together. Anna Wolin said it was only four of them. It was her and Brian. And it was this guy, I think his name was Frank Thorogood, and his mistress or his girlfriend, this guy had been like working on their house or something like that. She says there were only four of them there. Now, she says that she went inside the house to answer the phone or do something.
Mm-hmm.
And when she came back out, Brian Jones was submerged, like not moving at the bottom of the pool.
Hmm.
Now, she starts screaming. They pull him out and they try to revive him, but he's dead.
Right.
Now, here's where it gets weird because she says there were only four of them there. She left Frank and the girlfriend out there in the pool and she thinks that Frank drowned him. Maybe not on purpose. Maybe he was like, because apparently they were having some kind of scuffle about, because I think that she claimed that Brian had invited him there that night. He was going to fire him because he had been working on his house, like I said. And apparently the guy got really mad and stuff like that. And maybe was trying to scare him, but actually drowned him accidentally.
Mm.
Now, some people, you know, at the time, his death was just ruled death by misadventure. Which, you know, accidental. They said, he was a boozer. He was doing drugs. He just drowned in the pool. Shit happens. But there was drugs and alcohol in his system, but not enough especially for somebody that you'd think would have some kind of tolerance for it. So there wasn't really enough there. So that's why people started to suspect.
Well, people think that it's hard to drown somebody. It isn't.
That's true.
All it takes is that for that person who's underneath the water to gasp.
To breathe.
Gasp in surprise. If you inhale a lung full of water, it evidently kills you instantly. You know, there isn't any of that like slow. Remember how that one serial killer back in the late 1800s would marry a woman and then take a life insurance policy. They'd go in the bathtub and just grab their feet and lift the feet up.
Yeah.
And it would pretty much kill them instantly.
Yeah.
They did like a
that's pretty scary. Humans are so fragile.
Yeah. He'd grab her by the ankles and lift them up and the head would slip underneath the water. And of course they'd go gasp from the surprise from the of it.
Shock,
and
then
it would just boom.
And that would
instantly unconscious.
Yeah.
And then you die later, you know? So I guess it's not instant death, but instant loss of consciousness.
Yeah, which, you know, would lead to death in only a couple of minutes.
Because you're just there underneath the water.
I don't know. Like, I don't really have an opinion of whether. It does seem odd that, and everyone said he was a good swimmer. He did diving in school and stuff like that. So it does seem strange that he would just drown without someone kind of helping him out. And now, allegedly, this Thorogood guy, on his deathbed, he allegedly said that he had killed Brian.
Right.
Like, he just snapped and he couldn't take it anymore and he just got mad. Like I said, I don't know if he was intending to kill him, but I think they maybe got in a fight or something like that and just he pushed his head underwater and
took it
too far. But, you know, I don't know if that's true or not. That's allegedly somebody said that on his deathbed.
Okay, you don't know that he actually said that, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying that people said that he said that.
Okay.
But like I said, you know, still, to this day, it's kind of still considered accidental.
All right, which got next?
Even though it sounds kind of strange. Now, the next one, this is a more recent one, and maybe one that a lot of people don't know because it's very British-centric.
Okay.
There is a Welsh alternative band called the Manic Street Preachers. I think they're huge in the UK. I don't know, like, I've heard of them because I saw them on 120 Minutes back in the day, but I don't know how, like, famous they are in the United States in general, because I don't really keep up with that kind of stuff. But the member of that band named Richie Edwards, also sometimes known as Richie Manic, this is kind of a weird case. Now, this happened in 1995. On February 1st, he was supposed to fly to the U.S. to go on a promotional tour for the band. Now, there had been a couple of weeks where he would go to the ATM every day and take £200 out of his account until it totaled about £2,800. Now, some people have speculated that maybe he was, you know, getting money out like for the impending U.S. trip or something like that. But yeah, so he'd go every day and take out £200. So then there were a lot of like other kind of weird things that happened. Okay, so he goes and stays at this hotel in London. And there were all these weird, like, little things that he did. Like, he had this, he had a book called Novel with Cocaine, and he gave it to a friend and told her to read the introduction. And in the introduction, the author talks about staying at a mental asylum before vanishing. Okay, which seemed kind of odd. No one thought about it at the time until later. So then, evidently, while he's at the hotel, he took like some books and videos and stuff like that, and he put them in a box, and he had a note that said, I love you on it, and that was in the box, and the box, he like decorated it, like with all these literary quotes and stuff like that, and then he addressed it to someone named Joe, and I don't think they know who that is. So then he checks out of the hotel at 7 in the morning. He had left some of the stuff in the hotel, though, I think, including some of his Prozac, which he was on. He goes to his apartment, which was in Cardiff, Wales, where I've been to many times. Then they kind of spot him. He kind of like took off, like he went kind of off the map. Although he was seen in Newport, in Wales, in a bus station. He was seen allegedly by a taxi driver on February 7th, who said that they picked him up from the King's Hotel in Newport. They drove him around the valleys of South Wales, Blackwood, where he's from, which I've actually been there. My ex-husband has relatives there. And so the taxi driver drives him to the Blackwood bus station. And then the guy in the back, who is apparently Richie Edwards, says, this isn't it. And then tells him to drive him to Pontypool. Mm-hmm. So he drives him there. And then he's looking for a public phone, I guess, but there wasn't one there. So he was like, okay, well, just let me out here. So he gets out at the Severn View station, which is right by the Severn Bridge, which is like the bridge that connects South Wales to England. So he gets out there, he pays £68. And after that, no one sees him again ever. They found his car, which was a Vauxhall. They found it parked at the service station at Severn View on the 17th of February. They reported the car as abandoned. They said that it looked like someone had been living in it.
Yeah, he killed himself.
Well, see, they're not sure if that's what happened or not, because the Severn Bridge is kind of a well-known suicide location.
Right.
Now, it's possible. I mean, they never found the body.
Right.
You know, nothing like that.
Maybe he staged a suicide.
So people don't know if he actually did jump off the bridge. Because it is possible, like I said, you jump into the, you know, it goes into the English Channel, which goes...
So he took out, what, just 2,800 pounds?
2,800 pounds.
All right. Do they know if he actually spent that 2,800? Did he do enough stuff to spend that 2,800?
Not that the only thing they know of, they're like, there was a shop in Cardiff that said that he had ordered a new desk for his flat, and it cost about half that much. But as far as I know, I don't think he ever paid for it or picked it up or anything like that. So I'm not really sure if, like, he actually did kill himself, or if he just made it look like that.
Yeah, it could have been that he was trying to get enough money together to start a new life.
Right.
And then staged his suicide and then changed his name and become somebody else.
That's what some people have speculated. Maybe. I mean, it's been a long time.
That way he could live a life incognito and die incognito.
Right, because like I said, over there he was quite famous. He was actually in the media is, even though he specifically came out and said that he wouldn't commit suicide, that he would never do that, because someone did ask him about that, because he was very open about, you know, suffering from depression. He was a self-harmer, you know, things of that nature. So, but he specifically said that he wouldn't commit suicide. So people don't know if he actually did jump off the bridge and they just never found the body.
Yeah.
Or if he staged it to look like that. Now, he, this was 1995 that he disappeared. Yeah. So in 2002, which was 7 years, that's the same as the US and the UK. You know, after 7 years, you can be declared legally dead. Now, his parents didn't want to do that because they were still holding out hope that he was still out there somewhere.
Yeah.
So they passed on that option. But finally, when 2008 rolled around, they were like, okay, you know, we need to sort out his...
He's probably dead.
Yeah, we need to sort out his affairs and stuff like that. So they did have him declared legally dead in 2008, but he has never been found. And it should be noted, too, that he has been allegedly, and I mean, you know, I know they say this about Elvis and shit, too, but he's been seen in various places. Like, he was seen in a market in India. You know, so he's been evidently seen in places by fans of his. Yeah. So I don't know how true that is.
Right.
It, like I said, it seems strange they didn't find the body, but maybe it's not that strange because maybe it just went out in the...
Speaking of Elvis, I got an Elvis tale.
All right. Let's talk about Elvis.
Then. All right. The audience has to understand that, you know, my dad was from Mississippi.
Yeah.
You know, he's from Laurel, Mississippi. And my parents were divorced. So, you know, every summer I got sent to go to Mississippi to go hang out with my dad ever since I was a little kid, all the way into my 20s. Matter of fact, my first wife was from Mississippi, and I lived in Gulfport, Mississippi for a while. But when I was a kid, back in the 70s, in the early 80s, all right, in the Laurel, Mississippi area, also Heidelberg, Mississippi, which is even a smaller village. Okay, you people who are not Americans, you have to understand what Mississippi is in terms of, like, you know, American society. Mississippi is like the Afghanistan. It's like of America. It's like the tribal regions, all right? Mississippi is the poorest state. It's one of the most rural states in a certain way, or most redneck state. It's kind of like America's version of the Mekong Delta. It's like Vietnam in a certain
way. That's a good analogy.
Yeah, it's hot and it's muggy, you know. You can't even really compare it to Tennessee, which is right above it. Tennessee is like sophisticated compared to Mississippi. All right. Well, when I was a little kid, it was hard to differentiate. Okay, Elvis was from Tupelo, Mississippi.
Yeah.
Okay. So Elvis was basically kind of like a Mississippi demigod. All right. It was hard to tell a difference between Elvis and Jesus. In fact, when you went into a Southern house, you would see little statues of Jesus and little statues of Elvis next to each other.
Yeah.
You would actually see paintings, okay, of Elvis, Elvis's face, okay? And then next to Elvis would be a picture of Jesus, and actually it was the same face. It's just that the Jesus one had a beard on it. And it even had kind of like an Elvis haircut, all right?
Yeah.
And when I was a little kid, around, we call it my kin. You know, and it's hard to tell who was related to who, because in Mississippi back in those times, if your dad's was friends with your friend's dad, then in a way you were kind of like a cousin.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
These family clans would all hang around. And I don't mean clan like in the pointed hat clan. It's just kind of like, Mississippi's just a bunch of family clans. You know what I mean?
Clan
with a C. K might be involved somewhere back in the line. Because you understand, this is Afghanistan, and the clan with the K is like the Taliban of Mississippi, you know? So, even if you're not related to your cousins, but my little cousins would go say shit like, did you know that Elvis could make it rain and stop the rain with a word? You know, and all these weird legends about Elvis.
Yeah.
That he could stop rain, you know.
Yeah.
And that he could command the weather. And they really believed that. I believed it. You know,
you really believed that?
When I was like six or seven.
Elvis
could do that. There was very little difference between Jesus and Elvis.
That's awesome.
When I was about six or seven, the same thing, you know. Well, anyway, Elvis ended up dying, and that just fucked Mississippi up. It did. They just could not accept that Elvis died. Okay, so people started seeing Elvis.
Yeah. All right?
Well, something happened. Elvis came back. Did you know that? Elvis did come back. Came back under a new name called Orion.
Yes.
All right. And if you know who Orion was like a Elvis impersonator from Mississippi. He never said he was Elvis. He never claimed he was an Elvis impersonator. But if you hear Orion and see Orion, that's, he always wore a mask when he sang, but that sounded just like Elvis. And
he did wasn't, sound just like Elvis, yeah.
And he's not trying to sound like Elvis. That's just his voice.
That's just what his voice sounds like.
Because, you know, we're all kind of related, yeah. You know? They're all kind of related, so they kind of have that same kind of voice. And a lot of Southern guys have that same kind of look.
Yeah.
You know, certain people in my family look like that, and other, like my cousins kind of some kind, you know, they're not really really related, but just, you know, other kin kind of have that Elvis look. And anyway, Orion was a real guy. And it turned out he wasn't Elvis, but he got killed. He ended up owning a pawn shop after he got done touring.
Yeah, that's right, pawn shop, yeah.
Pawn shop got robbed, and they blew him away with a shotgun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's a really sad story. They made
it. You gotta graft in just a few seconds of Orion. And let them hear how close that sounds to to Elvis. I mean, that sounds just like it.
It was Paris on a Saturday night. She was stopped at a red light. She slowly moved her hand and teased her hair. While sitting in her Cadillac, she turned the mirror and she looked back to see if I was still there. Well, the light turned green, she drove on, sitting in that car alone. I could tell she had loving on her mind. Sophisticated and flirty, about the age of 30. Oh Lord, that woman sure looked fine.
They had women crying at the shows.
Yeah.
At Orion shows.
Well,
thinking that was Elvis spiritually returned.
It's kind of a sad. They made a documentary about it, and I think actually we talked about it on one of our Patreon only.
Oh, did we? Yeah.
Things, because we were talking about music documentaries, because we talked about Anvil and stuff like that. But yeah, we talked about the Orion documentary, and was it just called Orion?
I think
so. Or The Man Who Would Be King, or something.
The Man Who Would Be King.
It was something like that. It used to be on Netflix. I don't know if it is anymore. But yeah, it was a documentary about him.
Yeah.
And the sad thing was that, I mean, he was a big Elvis fan, obviously, and when he sang, he sounded like Elvis.
And he never sang Elvis covers.
Yeah, no, they were all originals.
They're all originals, and it's as if Elvis just kept on going.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's weird. Some people were surmising, is he actually related to Elvis? Was that Elvis's half-brother? Was that a child of Elvis? Nobody really knows.
Yeah, because, there was some speculation that maybe he had the same
DNA in some way.
Yeah,
they were trying to get pieces of his hair and do like a DNA test. Remember that? See if he was related and everything.
Yeah. It's kind of a sad story. I mean, not just because he got murdered at the end, like in a fucking lame-ass pawn shop holdup.
Yeah.
But also because he got famous kind of impersonating Elvis, sort of.
Yeah.
He always had to wear the mask, you know, the little masquerade mask. That was like his publicist.
That was his shtick.
That was kind of his shtick. And after a while, he got sick of it because he's like, you know, I'm kind of tired of this.
Being incognito.
Yeah. And, I'm kind of like really Elvis, you guys. He's really alive. He's like, he wanted to be known for his own music.
It was metaphysical. People were thinking that. They knew he wasn't Elvis risen from the grave. They knew that.
Yeah.
Okay. Some people were thinking maybe he's kin to Elvis.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Maybe he's kin to Elvis. Or it could be maybe in some weird paranormal way he's channeling the spirit of Elvis.
I think that's kind of what they were trying to get
at. And Orion actually was hinting that. He never said he was Elvis. But the weird motifs on the album covers was that he was somehow channeling the spirit of Elvis from beyond the grave. That's what the shtick was. Even though they never implicitly say this, they're alluding to this.
Well, because wasn't
and there'd be women crying at the shows, yeah, thinking that they were in a seance with fucking Elvis, basically.
Because wasn't it didn't they kind of base the whole idea on that woman's book?
Based on a book about Elvis returning from the dead.
Yeah, the book was about
it was a fanzine type book.
Right, it was like a novel, and it was and the character was called Orion.
Yeah,
but it was Elvis like reborn or reincarnated or something like that.
Yeah,
so they tied that whole in with this guy. With the whole shtick of this guy. And like I said, it's really kind of a tragic story because even though he did get super famous, I mean, it's weird because when we first watched the documentary, I had never heard of that.
Yeah, right.
And at first I was like, is this like one of those mockumentary things? Because like, this is like crazy. Yeah,
you don't think it's real, but it is
but
real.
Yeah, but so we went back and looked it up.
The South really is that crazy.
I know, I'm from here too. I'm from here too.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. But yeah, so.
The Taliban of Mississippi.
It is.
Yeah.
But,
You guys have to grow up there, man. If you grow up in this,
yeah, it's really something.
Especially
mean,
back in the '70s, the most entertaining thing you could find was like a shotgun and some gasoline.
Oh yeah,
we'd go burn the woods down.
Well, yeah. My brother did that with the fireworks though.
Yeah, Ample Shoot. You heard that one?
Did you tell me about that?
Yeah, Ample Shoot. My dad and his friends kind of got into that. You take a big metal plate. And you drill a hole in it, cut a big hole in it, and you weld another little cylinder with, you know, basically what you're making is a flat plate with about a foot with a barrel in it, almost like a cannon barrel, about a foot long, goes down into the ground. You bury it in the ground and you put levels on it to make sure it's perfectly straight up and down. And you pour one pound of black powder in it and put an anvil on top of that and then some fuse. And when it blows that anvil straight up in the air about hundreds of yards. You got to keep the dogs in, though, because the dogs try to catch the anvil on its way back down.
Oh, man.
And when it hits, it leaves a crater. Boom. And the idea is to blow the anvil up in the air and then have it come straight down on top of the metal, you know, flat plate.
Right, yeah.
So it goes, bing, and you do it for the Super Bowl. And the cops try to figure out what the hell that was. Set it off, boom.
Why
and then the cops
the
go, what the
Bowl?
Hell was that?
Why specifically?
Why not,
the Super Bowl?
Man? You're freaking drunk Mississippi dudes, you know?
Okay. Well, you think they'd want... I mean, that sounds so awesome that you'd want to do that every day,
you do it for
I
the Super Bowl.
Although, how often do you find an anvil?
That was a long time ago, though. They don't do it anymore.
That's hilarious what you said about keeping the dogs inside.
Got to keep the dogs inside. one time we did it, and the dogs started barking. Whoa! The dogs seeing the anvil come back down.
Well,
the anvil's coming down at 110 miles an hour. And we're going, no, stop. And the dog jumps up in the air and tries to bite the anvil as it's coming down.
Oh,
misses.
God.
And then falls into the hole that the anvil made.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah, well. No, he lived.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he jumps up out of the hole.
Oh, I thought you were going to say
no,
that.
No,
like
no.
It squished him.
No, he jumps up out of the hole. What was that?
You know? So some wily coyote shit.
Yeah, next year you got to keep the dogs and get the dogs in the house.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they probably do it now. If they're still doing it, then they're doing it for NASCAR now. Not NFL.
That was going to say, why would they do it for the Super Bowl? It seems more like Daytona 500. Or,
yeah, that's how it's probably changed now. That was 70s.
Or something. Yeah, that's
true. That was
true.
70s.
Yeah, when you could endanger yourself and others. And
Well, there's no law enforcement.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean?
You could kind of do what
you say, police, what's that? Oh, we got one of them.
I haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah, we got one of them. He's off today.
He's probably drunk somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I actually was going to, I think we're kind of running out of time, but
yeah,
I was going to go a little bit into the plane crash that killed Richie Valens and Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper, but I'm pretty sure that everybody knows that that was like a
old
deliberate
story.
Accident. Yeah.
Yeah,
and you know, and stuff like that. I think the only bone of contention was that somebody apparently discharged a pistol because Buddy Holly had a pistol and then he knew that he had one and they found it in the wreckage and they thought that maybe that had contributed to the cat it went off, but yeah, they're pretty sure that didn't happen. Also, the last thing I want to mention, and I didn't know about this, but did you know that Sammy Hagar of I Can't Drive 55
yeah I knew but go ahead and tell
claims that he was
abducted
by
aliens.
Yeah.
I don't really know the whole story, though. What does he say happened?
Now, apparently, this was, like, before he got famous.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So, apparently, it happened in the 70s, and he was living near San Bernardino. Evidently, this is how he describes it. He says, I was just lying in bed when I felt something weird going on, like someone was tapping into my brain.
Okay.
He says, I didn't know how to fucking explain it, but they were downloading or uploading.
Okay.
That's the simplest way to put it.
Yeah.
That's what he says. And then he says that he immediately realized that it must be aliens tapping into his brain. And he says, I could see them, two guys on this little hillside. They were playing with a numerical code, but it wasn't from our numerical system.
Okay.
And then suddenly this telepathic connection broke, and I could actually see them go back to their ship in a beam of light, zap, like lightning. For a second, there was an infinity of white. I couldn't move. And then it was over. It scared me nearly to death. So Sammy Hagar had his brain tapped by aliens, you guys.
He's tripping.
Yeah, I think probably he was tripping.
How old was he when this happened?
I don't know. They said it was in the 70s. So
back in the 70s, he was young.
Before he was famous.
He was dreaming. He was asleep.
That's what I'm thinking.
Either that or it was something kind of like, almost like a spontaneous out-of-body experience.
Yeah, it might have been something like that.
Which, you know.
Because the way he describes it, it's almost like, well, he just describes it as a feeling at first.
It's
like
sleep
a subjective
paralysis. Yeah. He's talking about sleep paralysis.
That's kind of what I'm leaning toward. Right. And seeing aliens and stuff like that is very common in sleep paralysis.
And if you keep going with it, you can actually make a full-blown OBE if you keep going with it. You know what I mean? But he probably fought it. It freaked him out.
Yeah.
Probably didn't know what it was.
I mean, you've had sleep paralysis, right?
Yeah.
I've had it happen one time. It wasn't aliens, though. I saw a murderer in my house.
In my life, I've probably had it three or four times, sleep paralysis. And as soon as I recognize what it is, I kind of like have fun with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I try to go OBE. It doesn't always happen, but it feels like I almost be able to have like an out-of-body experience, you know?
Yeah.
But it's weird to have a dream that you can control. And then you can look around in the room and you still see the real room and the dream overlaid.
Overlaying it. Yeah, that's exactly what it's like.
It's a weird mental state. But I kind of like
it. It is weird. Yeah.
I like all those weird mental states.
I do too. But the one time it happened to me, because it looked so realistic, because like I said, it wasn't aliens or anything like that. It looked like a person with a bat standing in my bedroom. And so it took me, like, it shocked me so much because I thought that was a real person, as you would. Mm-hmm. But then I thought, oh, this must be sleep paralysis. And then it kind of dissipated.
Yeah, and in one case that I had, you know what I mean? I was looking at the wall while I was in sleep paralysis and a face came out of it. But it was about 4 feet tall, the face.
Yeah.
And it looked kind of like, you know, Marlon Brando's face from Superman, you know, when it came out like crystal.
Yeah.
It was kind of like that.
I was kind of thinking of that scene from Nightmare on Elm Street where Freddy's face comes out above Nancy's bed.
No, and it was really cool looking.
You even heard the Superman.
Yeah, you kind of. Well, no, it wasn't like a negative experience. I just saw it like, you know, this chiseled face kind of coming out, and I was going, oh, yeah, I know what this is.
Hey, man.
I knew I was in sleep paralysis, and I was like, you know, wow, this is cool, you know, and then I don't remember what happened. You just kind of lose consciousness.
But yeah.
You know, after that.
So Sammy Hagar?
Tripping.
Yeah, probably.
Tripping. Well, he was a kid.
Either he was a kid
and he was in sleep paralysis.
Aliens were like, this guy, he's pretty cool. I'm going to go tap his brain. I'm going to get... So the aliens maybe knew the Van Halen songs like
before. No, they wanted to know what the speed limit was going to be.
That was some good information they needed to have. That was a good one.
What numbers? Five? Five. Okay. We're going back to Zeta Reticuli.
Shit. Okay, well, I think we're running out of time. This was kind of a rambling discussion, but it was kind of fun. We had like a lot of different topics, and there was some other stuff that I didn't really get to cover, but that's all right. So if you like the show, please remember to like, share, subscribe, and pass it around to all your friends, and you know how you do. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a Twitter, we have a Facebook, we have all that shit. Also check out our Patreon, which is patreon.com/13oclockpodcast. Hopefully they'll get that shit sorted out. But if you would rather not deal with Patreon and you want to just maybe give a one-time donation to support the show, that would be awesome. If you would do that, then just go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there is a link in the sidebar that will take you to a PayPal account. Also go to zazzle.com/13oclock and check out our t-shirts. We have six different ones now, I think. And also check out my new book, The Faceless Villain. The audiobook should be out very soon. And if you requested a free audiobook code, then you should be getting that in the next week or so. And that will do it for episode 69. We will see you next Tuesday. Bye. Said
5 years old, there was nothing happening at all.